Welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig, and I'm joined here with Shane Hastie.
Hi, Craig. How you doing?
Thanks, Shane. And Luke Homan. How you doing, Luke?
Hello, guys.
So we're here at Agile 2015 in Washington, D.C., and Luke, you gave a very inspiring and set the scene for the conference on Monday. So, welcome along. How are you enjoying the conference?
I'm loving this conference. I've been at most of the Agile conferences, and I helped form the first one way back in 2003, and I think this one is notable because it really does have a nice mix of technical content, which a few years has been a little light, and I think it has a mix of content for both people who are starting Agile and people who are more mature in their journey. So I'm quite impressed with what the organizing committee did.
And I guess it would be remiss of me not to mention if people sort of wondering where have I heard that name before. You are the guy behind Innovation Games, which is the firstly the book that many may have seen, as well as the company, and plenty of people have done the training or may have seen trainers around the place, and really brought games to a lot of Agile teams and things. Often I find that people don't realise we're actually an innovation game. Things like the Speedboat, for example, people just know that now as a thing.
As a thing, yeah. Yeah. And before that, like, people don't recognize or don't remember that I actually have a pretty deep technical chops. I was also the first book in Martin Fowler's series in Beyond Software Architecture.
Oh, of course, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So people are like, that thing. And like the whole notion of business models and how they affect systems and, you know, the notion of pricing and licensing and how they affect architecture and the choices that you're making. And so I even have patents on data warehousing, but I'm the games guy now, which is fine, which is completely comfortable for me.
Yeah. So these innovation games, or you were saying the other day, collaboration frameworks, and you presented a beautiful set of slides at the end of the keynote where you were talking about how to sell the idea of games to your boss. And would you rattle that off?
Oh my God! Okay, I'll try and do it by memory. But you would, depending on who your boss is in your company, you may not want to say, "Hey, I want to play a game." You might want to say something like, "Boss, I want to engage in a strategic, goal-driven framework defined by clear rules of engagement, and we will track our progress towards achievement of the goal through information radiators." And you pretty much have knocked off all the right set of buzzwords.
You've got permission to play a game.
And then people say, "Wow, that's really impressive. We should do that." And you're like, "Okay." And then you crack out Scrabble.
So basically what you're saying is you got to think of the question you want to ask and then change all the words to pay buzzword bingo, and then you're good.
Yeah. If you can win buzzword bingo in the description, it's good. So, you know, but I mean, we're making fun of that. But I mean, the reality is, and I said this earlier in my stalwart session, the goal isn't the game. It's not like, "Oh, I played a game," right? It's a serious game. So the outcome matters to the players. And it typically affects the players. And that's what makes it serious, right? So when we're playing, I mean, if we were to play Liar's Dice or any of the games that we love to play, you know, Cards Against Humanity, World of Warcraft, whatever it is, we're typically playing because we derive pleasure from play. And that's great. And that's an outcome worthy of itself, right? But in business, we elevate that. Now, one way to elevate that is through my dear friends and my colleagues, Dom McGreal and Michael McCullough over at Tasty Cupcakes. And that community has learning games where the goal of the game is to simulate or learn. And all of us who are trainers, and we use them. We think they're great. Like, here's a simulation.
Fantastic place to go and get stuff.
Fantastic place. And that serious outcome is learning. What I try to do is I try to take it one more step. And so I'm not here to teach you how to prioritize a portfolio. I'm here to actually prioritize the portfolio through a game. And so sometimes I describe it as, imagine you played Risk or Settlers of Catan, and you played this game, and then when you looked at the game board and you're done and you look at the results, you're like, "Oh, hey, that's what we should do.
There's our business model.
There's our business model, or there's our prioritization." And so the power of that, one of the things that I find is that when you do a survey, the first thing that you do in the survey is you kind of ask yourself, "How should I respond to this question? Like, what role do I want to play?" But when you're playing a game, the ability to step outside yourself is almost impossible, because when the game is authentic to you, you play as yourself. And so when you're playing like you know, buy a project or buy a feature with managers, and they know the outcome is going to affect them, they're not farting around, right? They're not playing. They're like, hey, the list of portfolio projects that we choose,
these are the things we're going to do.
These are the things we're going to do. Yeah. I better really step up. And this collapsing of self from your authentic self to your actual outcome is what gives the game their actionable power.
Do you think it's the... Because when you think about playing a game, you're thinking about playing Chinese checkers, or you know, you had a great example of Monopoly. You do it because you want to have fun. And quite often, if you play with your kids, you know, it's like, you know, they want to win or that type of thing. Do you think when we're talking about innovation games, or at least these games at work, is part of it fun, or is that the part that actually managers get hung up on, because there's a perception that we can't have fun doing this?
Yeah, so we don't use the word fun. In fact, I kind of remind people in my own company, like, we don't use the word fun. We use the word engagement. Hmm. And I got to that point because I came home from work one day, and one of my daughters, Josephine, said, "Dad, did you have a good day at work?" I said, "Yeah, I had a lot of fun." And she said, and she knows I play games, right? But she's, 11 at the time. She says, "Well, what games did you play?" I said, "Well, I didn't play games today, honey." And she's like, "Well, I thought you played games at work. Didn't you have fun playing games?" I'm like, "Well, no, I had this sense of engagement and satisfaction because I was doing work I loved." And I, and a lot of programmers and a lot of developers and a lot of technical people, we really do love our jobs. Yeah. I mean, we fundamentally love what we do. Yeah. But you can't go home and say, "I had fun," because it seems to be somewhat inadequate of a word. So then we go into psychology and we look at, like, oh, I was in the state of flow, and right? But the state of flow and the state of fun and the state of play are all indistinguishable in brain scans. Mm. Right? But yeah, some words are acceptable to describe that state. Mm. And so we tend to use the word engagement. Mm-hmm. But and I think it's also related to the concept of a goal, right? When I'm doing a game like Buy a Feature, my goal really is to prioritize my portfolio. It's just that my vehicle was engaging through Buy a Feature. When I'm playing Settlers of Catan, my primary goal might be spend time with my kids, but the vehicle is also engaging. So, and it's fun, right? Yeah. But,
and you beat it.
So I try to. I the problem is they're getting smarter and older, and they know Dad's weaknesses now, and they can beat Dad.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, one of the things that you spoke about in your keynote, moving on from the games or the use of the one of these collaborative frameworks games, was what you've been doing with the city of San Jose.
Yeah, so the city of San Jose is the first city that we started doing games with at a more of an, if you will, an epic scale. And what we did was we found that they were having a prioritization problem similar to the kinds of problems that companies have, right? I've got demand for $100 million, and I've got money for 50. How do I prioritize? And we applied the techniques, the collaboration frameworks that we've been using in business, into a city context, and it worked so well. We've done it for a few years, and that motivated us to start a nonprofit called Every Voice Engaged Foundation, because we wanted to make sure that the participants knew that we were being inclusive. Meaning, I don't actually care what your political persuasion is, but I do care that you want to be engaged with your government and you want to be engaged with your fellow citizens. And so from that perspective, it's hard to know that sometimes from a company, but from a nonprofit, we can put up a website that says we are nonpartisan, right? Mm. Right. And so that's why we started a nonprofit called Every Voice Engaged Foundation. And of course, I mentioned in my keynote, and I will always be forever indebted to one of our leaders, Lisa Adkins, who gave the name for us, Every Voice Engaged Foundation. It was very meaningful for me that she did that.
Cool. So tell us a little bit more about the foundation and the work you've done in San Jose, but also going beyond that now.
Well, so the foundation runs very lean, so we have a very tiny operating budget, but we've been able to produce these big results because we have this agile community, right? And this agile community spans the globe. And so what the foundation does is we'll work with cities, and then we recruit facilitators from our community to provide the services. And when people get excited about taking it to their city, we give them kits. And so Jürgen de Smet, for example, did these games in Kortrijk, Belgium, and he also extended it beyond what I talked about, and he did games with kids and some other stuff. So the idea of the foundation is not to centralize everything through the foundation, but instead provide a mechanism whereby people can get content and meet with other facilitators who care about that. And, you know, San Jose is a pretty big city, right? In America, at least. It's almost 1 million people. It's one of the 10 largest cities in America. But it's not a function of size, right? It's a function of, you know, what is the problem you're facing? I mean, you could do it at your school district or your school or your whatever organization you care about. And we want to make that available to people. We want to give them for lack of a better name, a destination to go of similar like-minded people.
And possibly, unlike a lot of organizations, I won't say all, but a lot of organizations, they get the idea of facilitating and having a discussion, but I suspect in cities and even schools, whilst they probably try to facilitate, they don't have those skills that we often find in an organizational sense. Therefore, this would actually be a very powerful thing for them to see.
Absolutely, and you know, and one of the things I wanted to stress in my keynote was that, you know, if you've participated in a single retrospective that was reasonably well done, you probably have the experience necessary to take a run at facilitating something with your fellow citizens. And we just happen to be a community who has a value called customer collaboration over contract negotiation, right? So if you return to our roots as agilists, not methodists of, you know, methodologists, like I'm a scrumist or I'm a safest or I'm a lessist or whatever. But if you just say, look, what's the root of what we do? It's agile, and agile has these values, and one of those values is something that I know how to do. Then it kind of unlocks all of this amazing capacity that we have in this community.
So if someone's interested in doing this, because you told the story about San Jose now for a number of years, and there was very a lot of convincing, or maybe not convincing, but them trying to get their head around this. So does Every Voice Engaged help with how you might spread that message so that you can get your city on board?
Yeah, you know, it's you know, in any endeavor, right, there had to be the first. And You know, San Jose was facing such a desperate problem, you know, $100 million in debt, that I really think that the reason they gave us a try was because they had nothing else to do, nowhere else to turn, and it couldn't possibly be made worse by bringing in this crazy guy who's going to do agile games, right? And then it worked so well that, you know, we were pretty confident it was going to work because we had so much experience in business, but it worked so well, the city was like, wow. And so I think the trick is, and that's why playfully we were talking about, like, how do you explain this to your boss? But in reality, it's sometimes I describe this as you can't, and I say this a lot to people in my classes, you can't read a bike. You can't read a bike. You can ride a bike, right? And you can feel what balance feels like, and you can feel what wind in the hair feels like, and you can feel what falling over when you try and stop and do the balancing that those cool guys do, and then you fall over and you skin your elbow. That's a feeling, but I can't give you that feeling by giving you a book or a guide. And sometimes, like, that's what we do, and that's why we do those simulation games in our classes, right? We want people to feel what it feels like to be agile. I mean, if you look at the root of what we're trying to do when we're doing simulation games in our agile classes, we're not trying to teach something, we're trying to give them a feeling. And then people go,
I owe you drink tickets.
Oh, this is our helpful drink provider in our interview.
So now once this goes really badly, we can at least go and get drunk.
We can at least go drink badly. someone is probably going to say, "Well, that's how Luke is all the time." But what we're trying to do when we do those simulation activities is what we're really trying to do as facilitators is we're trying to give people a feeling of Agile as opposed to a feeling of waterfall, right? And that's why I say you can't read a bike. And so the trick in going full circle back to your question, when people say, how do you get started? Sometimes truly the smallest thing that you can do but is congruent with the feeling is, and then people go, wow, that was a good feeling. And, we want to feel happy and engaged. And then people go, well, how do I do that again? Or how do I do more of that chain? And then people say, and then it becomes natural. So we've had clients, like one client, Transamerica, they've gone from zero to more than 1,000 games in 9 months.
Wow.
Because once they started, success breeds success. Mm. The good feelings proliferate. Mm. The good stories get shared. And people go, hey, I want that feeling too. Mm. And that's what we're doing a lot of in Agile.
Now, in the talking about 1,000 games in 9 months and the volumes that you were talking about even with the San Jose situation, you've actually created a framework and tools that people can do this online. So it really does.
Yeah, we can
scale.
It scales.
Use the term.
Yeah, yeah.
And that to me actually was the real thing I was so glad to see, having, from having heard it last time.
Right, yeah, when we did it the first time in San Jose, right, it was such a different thing that they weren't ready for online games. And I think that, people forget in our own community, right, we're on a very big bell curve. And some people have been doing Agile like you guys for years and years and years, and you're very high on your maturity curve. And some people are still just starting. And as a community, we wanna embrace the entire curve. So that's why I'm excited about the Agile Conference this year, is because we do have some expert content. But we also still have some beginner content. And I think that this notion of scale, which is the current buzzword in the Agile community, it is important to find techniques that do scale. And we're thankful that we do have a software platform, and that software platform does enable scale. So we have intimacy within a team, but scale across teams.
I think the other interesting thing that you mentioned in your keynote was the scale was one thing, but the fact that one of the things we often find on distributed Agile teams is people are unengaged by, because we talk about co-located teams and collaboration, and let's get together, and you actually saw the opposite in the data that you're seeing, that people actually liked the fact that they could take the time to think about the results, that they weren't being pressured to make a decision.
Yeah, and I think the other thing about that is, when you look at the notion of how do I have a distributed team become engaged, it's really, is the goal that they're working on something that is engaging to them? And it's not, do I have video? Video is a communication tool. And one of the problems that we have in all of this, right, is, and what's really hilarious is that you see all these companies say, we have unified communication tools. And then they say, with unified communication, you get collaboration. And that's just confusing communication and collaboration. We confuse communication and collaboration all the time. And when you do that, you don't get the engagement. Right? And so people are like, you can do distributed teams and you have to have video. Well, no, what you have to have is engagement, a commitment from the team members to achieve the goal together. Video just enhances that, but video won't create that.
Mm. Yeah.
Video won't create that commitment of that team to do a good sprint planning and hit the goal.
Yeah. I've seen co-located disengaged teams.
Yes. Yeah. So if we have co-located disengaged teams, right? I mean, it's the function of the goal itself. And so in my company, I have a co-located team and one developer in Germany and one developer in New York. Gee, isn't that interesting? Yeah. And yet we're still producing good software, right? And that is, we think that, of course, this is not to say video isn't important. Of course video is important. It's better to have video than not. How's that?
Yep.
And it's because humans crave complexity in communications, and we want chat, and we want video, and we want this, and we want this, and we want this. But all of those pale to a sense of commitment and engagement.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. It's the word engagement, because it doesn't matter whether you're co-located or not. And this is what I like about that is we actually can see that from a system that was completely collaborative with no video.
And in fact, as I outlined in the keynote, the San Jose residents were talking about how, and this is emerging research. There's some emerging research that's coming out that's saying, okay, we've all said that video is so important. The fundamental question is, perhaps, right? It was like way back when Don Knuth wrote "Go To Considered Harmful," right? When would video be considered harmful? Well, one of my funny stories about this is I have a large telecommunications equipment vendor who's a client in Silicon Valley, and I was talking about how the lack of video, and this is a company that does a lot of video, could be helpful, and this. It especially in negotiation of a complex, tense project portfolio. And this gentleman says, oh, Luke, you're overstating the impact of video. And I tell you, I'm a fully empowered leader, and my team does not feel intimidated at all. And you could hear a couple of snickers at the table from the people in the room. And I looked and I said to the gentleman, I said, could you just stand up? And he stood up, and this guy is enormous. He's like 6'7". And then I said, now to the two people next to him, could you just stand up? And as they slowly rose up, for the first time, he looked at them, and they were both women, and at least 14 inches shorter. And he went, are you saying that just my presence can influence an outcome? And I said, well, yeah, you're enormous. And I said, we're in a very safe place. I said, what do you guys think? And all the people in the room said, well, yeah, we know you try to be collaborative, but, and so people, and how about the person who may not be speaking English as a primary language? How about the person who might be far away and on a time delay, right? And not everyone can have high-speed internet. It's a tricky thing. But what we have found, to your point, is the engagement trumps the communication.
Mm. Yeah, that's key.
Absolutely key. Wow.
Excellent. Well, if people want to know more about you, Luke, and Every Voice Engage, which I would encourage, and I think it was your call. Especially your call was to play two games.
Play two games to change the world, because the world needs us. Mm. I mean, the world needs us.
Mm. So if people are interested, who might be listening, in knowing more about that, where do they go?
So the main website is everyvoiceengaged.org, one word smashed. And the Conteneo website is conteneo.co, not .com, but .co, because we're kind of trying to be that Silicon Valley cool.
And if people want to know more about you, Luke, where can they find you on the Twitter?
Twitter, books or whatever. It's not about me, right? It's about us. So I'm happy if they want to learn more about me, but what I hope they want to learn about is our community, because this is the community, right? It's us. It's us.
I don't think we can finish any better way, could we, Shane?
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much, Luke.
Thanks, guys.